Start your day off on the right foot with great local programming on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
We're here on the morning show today to talk about all the great things going on in the Richland School District. We have Superintendent Steve Board on for his monthly visit, but he's brought along some friends today. We have Sean Josem here. We'll talk about what he does as Director of Special Education, and Lisa Goff, school psychologist, and many other hats as well. Steve, good morning. How you doing?
Great morning. Happy New Year to you. And I'm doing great, and it's great to be back on again.
Yeah, it is. Good to have you here. Those months go by pretty fast, and here we are. Today is kind of a significant day for the district, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You know, first of all, it's been difficult for me the last, 10 days to try to get in the habit of writing 2025 on dates. You know,
it's me
just,
too.
Things have just flown by, but it's been crazy. But yeah, you know, today is a big day for all districts in Wisconsin. You know, we talk a lot about our enrollment numbers and the official enrollment counts that happen in the fall and September, but a lot of people don't necessarily understand that the Department of Public Education instruction also has a second official count, and that's the second Friday in January count, and today is the second Friday in January. And so all of the districts across the state of Wisconsin will be taking their second official enrollment count, and this is a big day for us because we've put a lot of emphasis on trying to not only retain our current students, but make our school district a place where students want to come, open up to a lot of alternative education options, and provide a lot of opportunities for students. And we've seen our numbers increase. And so today is kind of a day where we get to kind of solidify that. And did we increase? Have we increased from the fall? Where are we at from this year over last year? All signs are pointing to our numbers continuing to trend upwards, which is great. But today will be a nice day to figure out once all the dust settles sometime next week on where we truly ended up from an enrollment standpoint. And of course, you know, as you and I've talked about before, enrollment drives everything for school districts, right? It drives revenue, which then drives what we can do and what we can offer our students in terms of staffing and programming and different things like that. So today's a big, big day. It's going to have a direct impact on what our enrollment numbers that are reported DPI have, because what DPI will do is they'll take the average of the September count and the January count, and that becomes your official 24-25 count, which will then come into play next year when we get a per pupil allocation from the state. And there's a lot of variables and unknowns there at this point as well, because Governor Evers and the state legislation will be working on a new biennial budget this July. Last year at this time, a lot of the variables were known, right? Because we were in the second year of a biennial budget, and so we knew exactly what our per pupil increase was going to be. We knew exactly what spending was going to be. When we're in these years where we don't know what the 526 budgets look like at the state level, therefore schools across the state don't really know what they're going to get for school spending. They don't know what their revenue limits are going to be. We don't know if there's going to be cuts to education. Most signs since COVID are pointing towards legislation making a commitment to putting more funding into education, but how they get there is always a political drama that happens every year, and we don't know how that's all going to shake out. Governor Evers, 2 years ago, used his line item veto pen to put into place a $325 per pupil increase year over year for, I believe it's like the next 400 years or something crazy like that. But we also know that there was a period of time from 2012 to 2020 where schools got zero increase in per pupil in increasing. So we don't know what the state budget's going to be. We're hoping that the $325 or more per pupil increase applies once July 1st rolls around. And this is why it's difficult for schools, because the state's looking at budgets in the future. Schools have to have staffing plans established this spring, right? And they're operating on assumptions that they don't even know what's going to happen at the state level. And so it's never really been a real smooth process when we're in the middle of these biennial budgets at the state level, because we have to make so many assumptions. But to tie that all together, our enrollments are a huge deal. We have a graduating class, a 2025 graduating class of about 100 students. We're expecting our 4K enrollments to be steady at around 65. But that's still a 35 student decrease, right? For year over year, we're losing 100. We're bringing in 65. Again, we've talked before. We've got these two or three classes at the highest levels, grades 10, 11, 12, that are at our highest enrollment. And then there's a kind of a student enrollment cliff, and all of our classes from ninth grade on down are in the 80s or less. Okay, so we're kind of expecting a drop of about 35 students, which would typically be a decrease in revenue. But we're hoping that that per pupil increase, that the $325, is going to offset that. And so we're operating with the assumptions that we're going to be pretty budget neutral for next year. And by being budget neutral, then we're planning on being staff neutral as well. So we're not anticipating having to do any layoffs, do any cuts. I know that there's a lot of school districts around our area. In fact, our high school principals came back from a conference meeting yesterday, and a very, very common theme from all of the other schools, or a majority of the other schools, was the real possibility of having to make staffing cuts in other school districts. And I don't think we're going to have to be in that situation. So that's great. That's great for our staff. It's great for continuity of our students. It's great for our community. With that being said, we're always looking at ways to make our process and our people more efficient. Okay, and so that doesn't mean that we won't have some reconfiguration. Right, we sometimes have to slide people to other positions. They may not necessarily always be doing exactly what they're doing, but we don't anticipate having to make staffing cuts. And then the other variable at a local level, Phil, is that. And we've talked before about the alternative education options that we have at Richland Center. I'm a big proponent of finding different ways to meet students where they're at. And so continually having conversations about what does alternative education look like for different students at different age levels with different struggles, whether that be behavioral, mental health, anxiety, health-related. Again, not all students learn in the traditional brick and mortar, sit in a desk, lecture, listen, homework, rinse and repeat the next day. Not all students operate in that. In fact, many students don't. Many students survive in that format, but not necessarily students don't thrive in that. And so I think it's really important for our school and school districts across the nation really to be adapting to find out what are the best ways we can meet students where they're at. So with that, we're going to continue to look at other ways to try to meet students' needs. Maybe some changes for next year, might be 26, 27, might not be any, but we're going to continue to evaluate what we're doing and are we doing it the best way possible. So all of that kind of wraps it together, right? It all starts from enrollment because, again, enrollment drives revenue. Revenue drives what we're able to do. We think we're going to be budget neutral for next year. Again, tremendous support and appreciative of the support of our community from the referendum that they passed last April. That's going to allow us to continue to do these things and continue to be stable, right? We don't have a lot of extra money, but I do think we have enough finances due to that support from the community that we're going to be able to continue to move forward, make our school district a district of envy, make our school district one that our community can be proud of, and do that without having to make any staffing cuts.
In concerning the pupil count, it surprises me a little bit that they do it now because it's not the second semester yet, right? I mean, do you have a different number sometimes at the beginning of the next semester or not?
There are times when that happens. We do have students that graduate at second semester. I don't know historically if, how that all was originally created. Way back in the day, probably when you and I went to school, we were starting school in mid-August, right, around that August 20th date. So I don't know if the second Friday in January started way back then, when maybe that did align with the second semester a little more closely because students or schools were starting earlier, or if it's intentional to do it before students that might graduate early, are off the books, so to speak, and so you get an opportunity to count those. I really don't know the history behind it, but it is interesting. And the Richland School District, I'm sure many school districts in Southwest Wisconsin are similar to that. We're a very transient community. We have a lot of students that are coming and going all the time, right? And while we may only change from the fall student count to the January student count, we might only see a difference of four or five students. it would not surprise me if you told me, and I think this would be interesting data to try to find out, but it would not surprise me if you told me that, yeah, we ended up with a net difference of 4 students, okay, but we actually had 30 students coming and going, right? There's a lot of students in our district that come and go. And, you know, our folks here, Mr. Josem and Ms. Goff, will, they're leaders of our pupil services. That directly affects them, right? And they can talk a little bit more about that and how we handle students that are coming into our district, leaving our district, because we'll make sure that they're in a spot where they can be educated and be successful and, call Richland Center their home. So it is an interesting time of year.
It is. Well, that's a good transition. Let's bring them into the conversation.
Sounds great.
Bit.
I appreciate the fact that you called them my friends, because they don't always admit that. So now it's on the air. So.
Sounds good. Well, Lisa, Pupil Services, can you describe what that is?
So Pupil Services would be our school counselors, our mm-hmm. school nurse, myself, anybody else? Mm-hmm. That would be about it. But we're there to help support the students in various ways.
Okay. And you are a school psychologist.
Yes.
But you wear many hats, as I mentioned at the beginning. So.
And I get involved in everything. So I am the coordinator of Check and Connect. I help within the multi-tiered systems of support, so MTSS or RTI. I help within that. I help support the special ed world quite a bit, whether it's at meetings or testing or seeing students or just with the special ed teachers as well. Also with Mr. Josem, him and I tend to brainstorm ideas. We kind of just sit and talk about different topics, just trying to figure out a solution.
When Steve was talking about the number of students that come in and out, you were shaking your head. So that is pretty mm-hmm. common that you have
yep.
quite a turnover of students through
yep.
the year, don't
we
you?
Have, lots of kids that will come in just because of the community. I am the homeless liaison as well. So families or mothers will come in and like with our shelters. So they will start there. Sometimes they transition out of the community. Other times they might find housing within our community as well and stay longer. So I help support that area as well in regards to resources throughout the year, depending on what the family needs.
Homelessness is a real issue in our area, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, probably throughout the state. It's just there is definitely a housing. There just isn't enough housing available, and it's expensive. And if you're not working, it's figuring out where do we go with our family, with our kids, and be able to afford it and then get a job and transportation, all of that. So housing is definitely a concern all over the place.
As a district, then, what are some things that you do or can do, you know, in helping the family or getting them in the right direction?
One of the things is just, like, once the kids are enrolled in school, I can help support the kids here in school, whether it's through lunch and breakfast or school supplies. I do also have connections with families, like if they need clothing, furniture. I have a resource guide that I help or that I give to families, and that way then they can reach out to other such as like Southwest CAP, HHS can also help support. So I'm part of like coalitions, like we've got a homeless coalition here in Richland Center, so I'm part of that. So then I know what other resources are available to help these families. If they're looking for work, there's programs that they can be connected with in regards to that as well.
Sean Josem, how long have you been in education?
Well, I've been here in Richland Center since 2002. So for the first 10 years of that, I was actually the school psychologist. And after that, the last 12 years have been in this position, special ed director.
How things have changed in that time in your field.
It has, yes. Obviously, even the medical field has changed. So historically, many of the students that may not have gone to a public school because of some of their difficulties, disorders, impairments, are now coming into our schools, and we're having to meet their needs, which is great. But it also provides some difficult situation sometimes to meet their needs.
Special ed is kind of a blanket statement because there are a lot of different avenues, right?
Yeah, there is. I mean, special education. I mean, special means different, unique, individualized. And I think sometimes when people think about special ed, they may think about historically back in the day, you know, those were those kids that went to that special room. But really, special education is much more than that. Typically, people think, well, a special ed student is a student with a learning disability. But that's really only one of 12 areas where a student can qualify under. We have students who are blind. We have students who are visually impaired, hearing impaired. We have students who are both deaf and blind, so a double combination. We have students at our lower levels, our 3-, 4-, 5-year-olds, usually typically fall under what's called the significant developmental delay area. Other health impairment, which is kind of encompassing our students with ADHD, anxiety, those kinds of things. We have a large percentage in our district of students who are on the autism spectrum. I'd say probably almost 20% of our special ed kids are somewhere on the spectrum. I think certainly autism is a diagnosis that's increased over the years, but I think our district, for whatever reason, has probably a higher percentage of students on the spectrum than maybe some of the other districts. We have students who are orthopedically impaired. We have students who have emotional behavioral disabilities. So when you think of a special ed student, it's not really a one-size-fits-all. I mean, they can fall under any of those categories, and they certainly have what's called an individual education plan, and that's unique. So not every student has the same services, receives the same accommodations, those kinds of things. We get referrals from anyone, whether it's parents, teachers, community members, physicians sometimes. And I'm just going to touch a little bit on that because sometimes there's a misperception about when a parent maybe goes to see their doctor, their physician. And through that discussion, through that appointment, the doctor may say, well, I think your child may need an IEP based on this diagnosis. And sometimes parents feel, well, since I have that information from the doctor, then my child automatically qualifies for an IEP, and it's something that happens right away. Well, that's not quite true, because for us, we have to adhere to the Department of Public Instruction criteria. So if you have a child and the doctor may say, well, your child sounds like they might have a learning disability, they should probably have an IEP. Well, the DPI has certain criteria that we have to adhere to, and sometimes the student doesn't qualify based on that criteria. So that's sometimes a difficult conversation to have with parents, because I think the medical field has a certain clout. I mean, we think if we have a diagnosis and we get a prescription, then we have to kind of follow that. But I would say for the most part, those kind of conversations go smoothly. Parents certainly understand that there are criteria, processes that we have to follow in order for that student in order to qualify for services.
So you don't actually diagnose, but you do some work is in terms of screening to see what level we're talking about.
Right,
things like that.
Right. I mean, obviously, Lisa is certainly a part of that. We do all kinds of different testings and screenings based on the area of impairment we feel the child is going to qualify under.
It's amazing. Sometimes you may have a student excelling in several areas, but maybe deficient in one area.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly have some students who could be dually. We could have a student who's considered gifted and talented, but still have a learning disability. I mean, that is possible. So you have the two extremes. So yeah, you're right.
Do you have students that have helpers with them, so
yes,
to speak, as
yep,
well, or named?
Yep, so depending on the student's needs, we do have teacher's aides, classroom aides that go with those students. Some have one-to-one based on their impairment or their disability. But yeah, it's really kind of an all hands on deck. Special ed teachers quite often go into the regular ed classroom. More at the high school, we do a co-teaching model that seems to help. But then we also have specialized instruction where students do actually go to a different classroom and receive that individualized education. I mean, our goal is to provide what's called least restrictive environment, which means we want your child to have as much exposure to regular ed as we can. But there are some times when they need specialized instruction or specialized service, like occupational therapy or speech and language or something like that.
Can they get that at the district then, or do they go elsewhere for those kind of things?
Certainly, it's a process. Students have to qualify. They have to meet criteria in order to get speech and language therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, those kinds of things. Sometimes if they don't, then it's kind of up to the parent to maybe take them to the hospital as far as outpatient therapy goes.
And you're talking about the whole district, not just the high school, then, right?
Right, the entire district, yeah.
So you're the director for the whole works then?
Yep,
so.
Ages 3 through 21 is what we serve,
wow.
So yeah.
That's quite an age group.
It is, yeah. We have, I think, over at the last counts, were 232 kids, I think, in the district that have an IEP. We have students who, based on their impairment, may only just need some kind of classroom accommodation, and sometimes those students fall under what's called the 504 plan. And that 504 comes from, I think, the 1973, I might be wrong in the date, Rehabilitation Act, which means essentially you can't discriminate against people in the workforce based on their disability. And Section 504 of that is really what schools have to adhere to, as far as we have to provide an equal playing field for students who have disabilities.
How long have you been with the district, Lisa?
9 years this year.
9 years this year.
Yep. Yeah.
And your role has changed a little bit through those years, too.
It has. It has. And I think hopefully I'm adapting as we see the needs arise. And things are changing with our students, with just education in general, whenever they bring in such as like Act 20, and just being up to date on that and helping support our title department in regards to new screeners that have come out recently and all of that. So
I know you have some family events from time to time. Do you have any coming up here in the near future?
Yes, we have Strengthening Families. Last year we did this twice in the school year. This year we're only doing it once. So we do have that coming up the beginning of March. Runs for 7 weeks. We will be starting at 5:30 with a meal. And then at 6 o'clock we start the program, and it runs until 8 o'clock. So we are looking for families with students ages 10 to 14 to sign up, and they can call me at the primary school to sign up. But this is a program that is no cost to the parents or to the family. I think it's a very valuable program in regards to just helping the family become a stronger unit together.
It starts at home, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And some of those skills can also be brought into the school setting as well. We do have, at the primary school particularly, we have a student success team. So teachers can bring concerns that they have with students. And so that's just a bigger picture of bringing all of those pieces together.
When you have a strengthening family night, then what are some things you do at that?
Well, the students get, with the students, it's mostly game-based. So they come in and they play some games and they do an activity together. But it's each night there's a specific topic that we talk about. And one of the big things is helping these students understand that they can say no to their friends, whether their friends, you know, maybe are drinking or any, you know, things like that, vaping, and giving them the tools to be able to stand up to their friends and not be mean or unkind and you know, say, no, I can't be friends with you, but just helping their friends understand this is not okay. And so we give them the tools to be able to tell their friends no, and let's go do something else instead of this particular behavior that is probably going to get them into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the fun nights that we have, because we actually have the parents then act as the student, and the student gets to act as the parent, and so they kind of reverse those roles and try and get their student to, no, you need to go do other things. And these parents in the past have definitely given these students a challenge to figure out how to get them to not do this poor behavior.
That would be fun to watch,
it,
I think.
It is. It's very entertaining to watch, but very powerful. Very powerful to watch between the student and so it's like their child is trying to tell them, no, you can't do this. And I think it gives everybody a better perspective of this is what my parents go through, but also for, you know, the parent, it's kind of like, yeah, I can now give my child a little bit of what I'm trying to deal with.
You recently had a couple of gentlemen come through that that put on like a scenario.
Box out bullying.
Box out bullying. I couldn't think of the title because they were here, but that must have been a fun event as well.
Yeah, and each year it's different. The last 2 years it's been somebody different, and they're very engaging. And what I particularly like about that program is, yes, they're presenting at the primary school, the intermediate, and 7th and 8th graders. But they adapt the show and the content for their age range. And they do such a phenomenal job, and they're very engaging with the students, and they engage the staff as well. And I think just the way they are helping kids understand, you know, that you can say no and you have a voice and all of that, and bullying is not okay. I think they do it very well.
We're talking to members of the Richland District, and we'll have more coming up here on our Friday morning show after these words. Welcome back to the morning show from WRCO Radio. Good to be in the studio here with guests Sean Josem, Lisa Goff, and Richland Superintendent Steve Board. Steve, as we talk here, I guess the deadline is passed for school board if you'd like to run, but you could still write it in if you wanted to, right?
That's exactly correct, yep. So January 7th at 5 o'clock here this past Tuesday was the statewide official deadline to declare candidacy for school board elections in April 1st. If there's enough, then there's a primary in February. We didn't have enough. We had two seats that were open. We had it's an area 2 west. It's essentially the village of Boaz and some townships to the west of the city of Richland Center, not within the city limits. There was one seat open there. Aaron Umbehan, our current board president, has decided to rerun for that, and there were no other folks that filled out an application to do that. So he will be running unopposed. Again, as you mentioned, there's certainly a possibility for a write-in candidate, and folks living in that area can still do that. But Aaron Umbehan will be an incumbent and be shown on the ballot representing that area 2 west area. And then the other seat that was open is a Richland City of Richland Center seat. We have a couple of seats that you have to reside in the city. We have an area west, an area east, and then there's a few at-large positions on our board. So this is a city-specific seat. It's currently held by Mr. Neil Huntemer. Mr. Huntemer has served out his term, and he has decided to not seek another term for election, and so he will not be on the ballot. We did have one candidate declare their candidacy. Brian Miller, who lives in the city, will be running, and so his name will be on the ballot. And again, any write-ins that live in the city can certainly do that as well. There's a process that they have to declare to be an official write-in candidate, but if anybody has any interest in that, they can certainly pop up or call the district office and talk to myself or Laura Steele, and we'll talk them through the process. But two names on the ballot for two seats. Aaron Umbehan, our incumbent, will be for Area 2 West, and then Brian Miller will be the lone name on the ballot for the city seat. And again, that'll be on April 1st. There will be no primary needed, so it should be a relatively smooth election cycle this time around, at least as it relates to the Richland School District and the board. And then those folks who get elected, they will take their seat officially, I believe it's April 27th, the last Monday in April, and that'll be the start of their official term.
That time's coming. Boy, time goes by fast, doesn't it?
It sure does. It just flies by. It'll be here before we know it.
And you haven't been calling me about bad weather. this year.
Isn't that nice? Yes.
Sure.
Hopefully we can keep that trend continuing.
We'll hope so anyway.
Yeah, it's always, you know, now until really mid-March, really, when you can get a lot of different weather situations, whether it be cold weather, snow, ice. In fact, sometimes later in the winter, and you get into the March where the temperatures warm up just a little bit, precipitation when it's 10 degrees out is a lot different than when there's precipitation and it's 30, 31, 32 degrees out. You can get some really wet, heavy, high accumulation, freezing rain, ice, that whole mixture. And that's really where a lot of the danger resides. So the forecast right now looks like it's promising. So hopefully we can get through January without any big hiccups. And then February is a short month, and then we're into March, and spring break will be here before you know it.
Stay tuned for the second half of today's morning show program on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE. Coming up, though, in just a moment, we'll have a look at today's news.
Richland County Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
WRCO 100.9 FM, Richland Center.
News Time today is sponsored by Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy, or full-service pharmacies, caring for you and about you, and by BL Signs. Today's forecast calls for partly cloudy, breezy, and cool conditions, a high of 15 and a low down to 1 below zero tonight. Right now at the studios, with a wind chill around 15 below, our actual reading is negative 1.
The Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy has exceptional caring staff and great services. They are a locally owned, independent pharmacy, proudly serving the surrounding area communities. The Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy is committed to helping patients manage their medications. The pharmacists work along with patients and their healthcare providers to find an individualized plan to help each patient maximize the benefits of their medications while minimizing or preventing adverse effects, interactions, costs, and waste.
I'm Phil Nee with a look at WRCO, WRCE News. The man arrested and charged in the deaths of three people in New Lisbon has a $5 million bond set in the case during an appearance Friday afternoon in a Juneau County courtroom. Judge Stacey A. Smith ruled the large bond was appropriate for Virgil Thew after hearing comments from Juneau County District Attorney Kenneth Hamm. Originally charged with three counts of first-degree intentional homicide in the deaths of Elizabeth Kolba and two juvenile females ages 12 and 13. More charges were filed against him on Friday. They included three counts of hiding a corpse, possession of a firearm by a felon, take and drive vehicle without consent, and resisting obstructing an officer. During his comments, Hamm asked for the high cash bond after detailing what Thew did during the 12 days after the homicides and before his arrest. Hamm said that Thew admitted to law enforcement after his arrest on Thursday that he tried to hide his crimes as well as tried to elude law enforcement. He told the court Thew stuck to rural areas and also took a car in an effort to get away. A Juneau County Sheriff's deputy arrested Thew in Elroy early Thursday afternoon after someone called the sheriff's office to report a suspicious person. Thew has no attorney to represent him at this time. Judge Smith briefly discussed the options for getting an attorney. He will return to court on February 13th. The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs is asking for Valentines for veterans. Program specialist Jody Barnett says the Valentines get delivered to three veterans housing and recovery program locations across the state. They're asking for any sort of gifts or cards you want. Just don't send food or candies along. Valentines get delivered to three veterans housing and recovery program locations across Wisconsin. The barricades are back out along roads on the Lac des Flambeaux Reservation. Wausau reporting the tribal leaders are preparing to block off roads on the reservation in under a week if the town of Lac des Flambeaux doesn't pay easement fees on the roads. The tribe is giving the town until Thursday to get current. Those roads cross tribal lands to get to private homes of non-tribal members, and the companies in charge of those properties stopped paying easements decades ago. A spokesperson for the tribe says Thursday will be the end of a 90-day warning of non-payment.
A new recycling practice may explain why the amount of collected materials dropped by nearly 7,000 tons between 2013 and 2022 in Wisconsin. Wisconsin Policy Forum Senior Research Associate Tyler Brenz says it's called lightweighting. Companies have shifted to using less materials to package their products, which leads to less waste in the system. Brenz says a plastic water bottle today weighs only 40% less than one from 10 years ago. There's a fight from the upcoming state budget looming in the legislature these days.
Speaking to WISN's Upfront, Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux says his Republican colleagues will be tossing out much of Democratic Governor Tony Evers' budget proposal.
All of his policy issues that he's already talking about, we'll pull out all the policy issues right away. It's a budget. It's not a policy vision for the governor.
Lemieux wants to work with the Assembly to craft a major tax cut ahead of the budget process to send back billions in tax surplus to taxpayers. Raymond Newport, Wisconsin Radio Network.
Kohl's is planning to close 27 underperforming stores in 15 states by April as the struggling department store chain aims to boost profitability and improve sagging sales. The announcement on Friday comes as the Menomonee Falls, Wisconsin-based chain has had 11 consecutive quarters of sales declines. The stores identified for closure include 10 in California, but represent a fraction of Kohl's locations. Kohl's is getting a new leader as well. Michael's CEO Ashley Buchanan will take over the chain's top job. Traditional department stores have struggled to retain customers as consumers shop online and look for bargains. On Thursday's, Macy's disclosed locations of 66 stores it plans to close early this year. The enrollment period for affordable health care coverage is open for a few more days.
Wisconsinites statewide can sign up for health insurance now through January 15th. The open enrollment period began on November 1st and extends through January 15th, 2025. More than 250,000 people in Wisconsin signed up for health insurance during the last open enrollment period. Signed into law in 2010, the Affordable Care Act ensures people can access health insurance without lifetime limits and protects the coverage of people who have pre-existing conditions. Another key provision of the ACA, authored by Senator Baldwin, allows young people to stay on their parents' insurance until the age of 26.
That was Melissa Kay reporting. And also a reminder that National Blood Donor Month continues with the opportunity to give the gift of life in the area tomorrow from 11:30 until 5:30 at St. John's Gym in Muscadet. Don't sit on the sidelines. Kick off the new year with a blood or platelet donation. To book a time, visit redcrossblood.org, download the Red Cross Blood Donor app, or call 1-800-RED-CROSS.
Whenever you're in southwest Wisconsin, you're never far from someone who trusts BL Signs. From the van with a sleek wrap you're meeting, to the business sign that welcomes you before you step out of the car, or the restaurant sign that makes your mouth water, BL Signs is behind it all. With a reputation for delivering projects on time, on budget, and with the highest quality, BL Signs of Richland Center is your go-to for all things signage. Visit them online today at blsignage.com.
Today's forecast, partly cloudy, breezy, and cold, a high of 15 with west winds at 10 to 16 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy and very cold, a low of 1 below zero. And for tomorrow, partly cloudy to sunny and a high of 14. Tuesday night, 1 degree below zero. Then Wednesday begins a warm-up trend, a high of 24. Thursday, 38, a nice day with partly sunny skies. Friday, partly to mostly cloudy and even warmer with a high of 42. Right now in Richland Center, following yesterday's daytime high, and that was in the morning, we hit 28. We did receive a dusting of snow, kind of a mixture of precipitation, as we had a mist in the air a little bit later on in the day. Right now, it is 1 degree below zero, and you factor in the wind chill, which is now down around 14 below zero. Also, the barometer is steady at 30.07, and no precipitation edition today. It is an on-time morning in southwest Wisconsin. Following the midnight mark of 9, we're at 1 degree below zero.
Reducing the risk of illness is easy with a visit to Center Pharmacy or Boscobel Pharmacy. Center and Boscobel Pharmacy are your vaccination headquarters for the flu, pneumonia, and shingles. No appointment needed. The helpful staff will have you in and out in no time, often at no charge with qualifying insurance or Medicare. Don't wait. Get protected today at Center Pharmacy on Orange Street or Boscobel Pharmacy in downtown Boscobel. The Shingrix vaccine is in stock, proven to be 90% effective for the prevention of shingles.
After you use Bounce Dryer Sheets and realize how fresh, soft, less wrinkled, and less staticky your laundry can be, you'll every time. Like those socks that smell like they've been through a marathon. Or that blanket that's got wrinkles on its wrinkles. Maybe even your chatty coworker who keeps distracting you. Okay, Bounce Dryer Sheets can't do it all. But for fresher, softer, better laundry,
Sports Time is next. It is sponsored by the Homesteader Store, Southern Wisconsin's tractor experts. A look at a busy basketball schedule for tonight. Details on the football ending for the Green Bay Packers. The season is done, and some good games yesterday. Another one planned for tonight in the NFL playoffs.
LS tractors are a great tractor at a great price. Hi, I'm Rick from the Homesteader Store. The fastest growing tractor line in Wisconsin is LS Tractor, part of the LG Group of Companies. These high quality four-wheel drive diesel tractors are one of the best values in compact tractors. They have silky smooth hydrostatic transmissions. They offer great financing. You can go to our website where you can watch a short video where I go through the different sizes of LS tractors to fit your needs. Learn about the full line of LS tractors at Southern Wisconsin Tractor Experts, the Homesteader Store.
On the high school basketball scene tonight, Wazika Steuben plays at Richland Center in boys basketball. Highland at Pecatonica, Royal at Nisida, Potosi at Schulzberg, Cassville at Benton, Monticello at Barneveld, and Belmont travels to River Ridge. Girls basketball tonight, Dodgeville at Potosi Cassville, Baraboo at Sauk Prairie, and Brookwood at DeSoto. Royal travels to Ithaca. Mineral Point at Mount Horeb, New Lisbon and North Crawford. Cuba City travels to Oregon, and Hillsboro at Lafarge. And also tonight, Riverdale plays at River Valley. It's our next featured broadcast in WRCO, good local girls basketball matchup on the air tonight, beginning with a pregame time sponsored by Bethesda Power Sports around 7:15. The Packers' 2024 NFL season ended with mistakes and penalties at Philadelphia, 22-10. Quarterback Jordan Love was intercepted 3 times in the NFC wildcard game against the Eagles. Philadelphia recovered a fumble on the opening kickoff and scored the first touchdown of the game 3 plays later. The favored Eagles never trailed. Running back Josh Jacobs ran for 81 yards, and the Green Bay Packers' only touchdown. The Packers were penalized 8 times for 85 yards as their season ended. Here is Coach Matt LaFleur.
You can't start the way we did and to fumble the opening kick and then turn it into a touchdown and be set down 7-0 from the jump. You know, it was obviously too much to overcome, but I appreciate the heck out of our guys in that locker room. Those guys show up every day with a great attitude, great energy, and compete. And I thought our guys competed to the final whistle.
The Packers' Xavier McKinney talked about the loss.
It's tough. It's a part of the game, though. Like, you know, I always say, like, it's not going to go perfectly. It's not always going to go how you want it to go. Turnovers are going to happen. Sudden change is always going to happen in this game. And we got to do a good job of going out there and adjusting to sudden change. Like I said, I thought we did well today. I thought we handled sudden change well. And, you know, for the most part, I thought we did a good job defensively of getting the stops that we needed.
Josh Allen threw 2 touchdown passes. James Cook scored on a 5-yard run and finished with 120 yards rushing. And the Buffalo Bills leaned on a balanced offensive attack in a 31-7 win over the Denver Broncos in a wild card playoff game. And Jaden Daniels ran for a critical first down to set up Zane Gonzalez's 37-yard field goal that clanged off the right upright and went through as time expired. And the Washington Commanders beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 23-20. 20 in an NFC wildcard game for the franchise's first playoff win in 6,945 days. Daniels became the third rookie quarterback in 3 years to win a playoff game. The Commanders will face the number one seed Detroit Lions in the divisional round. Daniels threw for 268 yards and two touchdowns. Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers missed several opportunities, and the veteran quarterback committed a critical turnover in the fourth quarter. Well, coming up tonight, a big one in the NFL as the playoffs continue. They're not done yet. One more game coming up tonight, and it's featuring the Vikings playing against the LA Rams in Arizona. Games in Madison Square Garden are tough on the Bucks. For the second time in two visits, Milwaukee was blown out of an NBA contest by the Knicks, 140-106. The Bucks trailed by 13 points at the half Sunday, and the game became lopsided quickly when New York scored the first 10 points of the third quarter. The loss snapped a three-game winning streak for Milwaukee. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 24 points and 13 rebounds, and Damian Lillard scored 22. The Bucks tip off a four-game homestand Tuesday when Sacramento comes to town. The Badgers will get back to action in men's basketball coming up on Tuesday, taking on Ohio State following the Buckeye 73-71 overtime loss to the Oregon Ducks. Tuesday's meeting will be the first this season between the two teams. Wisconsin is 3-2 against the Big Ten, and Ohio State is 2-3 against conference opponents. The Wisconsin women's hockey team completed a weekend sweep of Minnesota State Sunday with a score of 3-1. Three different Badgers found the back of the net. Lacey Eden, Casey O'Brien, and Cassie Hall. Ava McNaughton earned her nation-leading 21st win by stopping 17 of 18 shots. That's an update on sports for a Monday morning. I'm Phil Nee.
We'll be talking about graduation. So it's right around the corner. No weather delays from here on out. Although the kids there are like, can we just have a snow day in February? So, just to get a little bit of a break. This is a grind right now, right? You mentioned it earlier, but this is a time of year where there's not a lot of breaks, right? We get Martin Luther King Jr. Day off. And then in a couple Mondays here, next Monday, I guess, actually, no, a week from Monday, mm-hmm. And then we really don't have a lot of breaks until spring break, which is at the end of March. So it's a time of year where a lot of routines are established, a lot of learning happens, but it does become a grind. And so it's important for all of our families to stay diligent and stay motivated and get them to school.
The state convention is coming up here this next semester, too.
Yeah, every January, three statewide organizations, WASB, which is the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, that's the association that many school boards, our school board included, that's their association. WASDA, which is the Wisconsin Association of School District Administrators, superintendents, and other district administration, is part of that association. And then WASBO, Wisconsin Association of School Business Officials, those three statewide entities all come together and they put on what's known as the Wisconsin State Education Convention. It's held every year. As far as I can remember, it's always been in Milwaukee. It's a 4-day event where there is a lot of learning, a lot of opportunity to network. It is for administrators. It is for school board members. It is for people who are making high-level decisions within the school district. And this year, it starts on January 21st. That Tuesday goes through Friday the 24th. Keynote speakers every day. There are dozens and dozens of different breakout sessions where different members, depending on their background and their role in the district, can get different information. As a superintendent, I will have different things that are more specific to superintendents, maybe legal updates that are coming down the road, things like that are important for me. Mr. Josem may have special education updates, pupil service updates that he may be looking at attending. There'll be some business-related, HR-related, employment, staffing sessions that they'll have. They'll also have a lot of sessions specifically for board members. And so this year, the Richland School District, we're taking 6 members of our leadership team down as administrators, myself, Mr. Joe Sem, Dr. Sherry Johnson, and then our marketing communications director, Carrie Stoltz, will be going down, as well as 2 board members. Board member Robin Dickman and board member Sheila Traxel will be attending as well. So we'll all meet down there. We'll all get a plan of attack. We'll break out into different sessions. We usually meet every night and have a meal together, talk about the day. Really, really a good opportunity to really talk a lot about what's going on in our school district, what we're learning. Hey, I heard this. How would that fit into our model that we're currently doing? Can we do that better? All of those things that just help make our school district better and enhance our programming. A lot of those ideas come from when you hear something at a session, then you talk about it with your team of people and you just start brainstorming. As Lisa mentioned earlier, that her and Sean do as pupil services, we're doing that now at a district level as we're going to these events. It's really a powerful event. We've had, you know, the opportunity to have our band perform down at the state convention in recent years. So things like that are going on as well. I mentioned the keynote speakers, but really just a lot of good collaboration and all education focused events. So I'm excited to be a part of that. I'm excited to be part of that team that's going down there and moving our district forward. And a lot of that will start by planting the seed at that convention.
Awesome. Sean, it probably recharges the battery a little bit, those kind of events, doesn't
it? Yeah, it does. I mean, certainly it's always a learning experience. I mean, we don't have all of the knowledge that we need to have at all the time. So I think that I went to the school board conference last year and it was beneficial, and again going this year, because there's always something new to learn.
Let's talk. We wanted to kind of touch base with you about Birth to Three. Can you describe that?
Certainly. So obviously the school district educates students 3 through 21, like I indicated in the previous segment, but it really is a kind of a community approach. So quite often we receive students from the county's Birth to Three program, which provides services for students, children who are under the age of 3 because of some impairment or difficulty. And then those students transition into our early childhood program at the age of 3. We also work with the Head Start program, working with them with students who have challenges, so to speak. So it really is kind of a community effort to kind of find children in our community that struggle for whatever reason.
A screening is coming up for the district,
isn't it? It is, yes. I'm glad that you asked that. So, obviously, we evaluate students all the time, but we really have an event coming up, which is our 4K screening. So it's not only for our 4K incoming 4K students, but it's also an opportunity for parents to bring in their 3- and 4-year-olds to get evaluated to see if they would qualify for special education. And that event is a little later this year than it typically is. It's right after our spring break, and our spring break is late this year, but I think the 4K screening is April 7th, the first Monday in April, through April 10th or 11th, Thursday or Friday.
That's for all students.
It is for all students, yep.
But if a parent has a concern, maybe their child's speech is a bit delayed and things like that, that's when they should reach out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Sure. And I think there is either a sign-up opportunity, or if they have questions, they can call Amy Hardy at the primary school. She kind of heads that screening.
Some of those things that you can nip in the bud, so to speak, right?
Right.
Indeed. Yep. Lisa, we wanted to come back and talk to you a little bit about the Check-In Connect program?
Yeah. Check-In Connect. So I'm the coordinator for that program, and we are in year 2. This year, I've got 16 mentors, and they are mentoring 17 students. And pretty excited because we do have 2 kids who will be graduating early. And I think it's probably one of those, it's not like an easy, well, oh, look, they're going to graduate early. This, from my understanding, it's going to go right up until probably the last minute to see if they're going to be graduating or not. But exciting in the sense of those students being a part of our program. So they've been a part, this would be their second year in the Check and Connect program. And between, and it's not just the mentor, but it's kind of like the special ed staff as well as the mentor, just working pretty hard to get the student to on track and to be able to graduate early. So pretty excited about that we're having. And at this point, from last year and this year, we've had all our kids who have been seniors as part of the program. They have graduated, which is part of where this program came from, because our district did get identified in regards to our graduation rate. And so that's where this program came out of, in regards to working at relationships. And we know that when kids have relationships at school, they're more apt to come to school, so their attendance improves. And when their attendance improves, chances are their grades are going to improve as well. And so that's where the mentoring comes in, because those are areas that the mentors track with the mentees on a weekly basis.
Where does the mentors, where do they come from then?
The mentors actually are staff members up at the high school. This year I've got a few that I've actually got an individual from the intermediate school who was interested in mentoring. And then I've got a past employee who is continuing mentoring with her students. So, and I've actually got, I had two positions approved, so I can actually recruit two more mentors, which right now I've got probably at least a handful of mentors that I'm going to go pester. individuals who I want to be mentors, because I think they would be a good fit for some of these kids.
That works out well, because a lot of times the students probably don't want to let them down, you know? I mean,
Yes and no. We've just had some interesting, I meet with the mentors on a monthly basis, and I always check in with all of them and ask them for updates or concerns, or if they have some neat stories and stuff like that. So I have to share one with you. What we've planned is a quarterly get together between the mentors and the mentees. So at the beginning of the year, we took all the mentees down to Dario, and we learned that within the time frame we had, we really hustled to get there, get their ice cream, and get them back in time, because it's a little bit longer walk than I had anticipated. But one of the neat stories that came out of that, so I've got a mentor and a mentee, and the mentee was all last year was like, I don't want to be a part of this. I don't like this mentor. Really gave him a hard time. And this year, they walked down to the Dario with us, and the mentee was like, are you going to be okay? Can you make it? And I mean, just the care and concern that the mentee was showing to the mentor was just, and I mean, the whole attitude of this mentee was just different this year. So it's just fun to see. He actually now seeks out his mentor this year, where last year was like, don't bother me. So it's stories like that and those relationships that are being built. That is just, I think, the funnest part of this entire program. And we had a Christmas get-together 2 weeks ago, or last week we did. So we had another group that came in, and they hosted a Christmas gathering for us. So they brought hot chocolate, and we had a cookie decorating contest, and we had lots of games for the kids to play and the mentors as well. And I think everyone had a great time with it. But one of the mentors was not able to come, but the mentee came. And at the end, they were cleaning up and everything, and they made a cup of hot chocolate and a cookie for their mentor. And so I helped carry that down. And as we were walking, they're explaining to me that they put the initial of their mentor on the trunk of the Christmas tree. And to me, it was just, I mean, I thought that was just the coolest thing to see, that they took the time to share this event with their mentor, even though they knew that their mentor wasn't going to be there. So it's just those kind of stories are just, I don't know, I think that's why I do this, is because I just know the value of relationships, and I've seen it.
The district has been able to make some steps toward avoiding students dropping out, Sean.
Yes. So this, again, like Lisa said, this all came about from our district, among many other districts who were identified as a higher than expected dropout rate probably 3 or 4 years ago. And through this group that we meet, this it's called the GRIP group, Lisa found this Check and Connect program. And again, I know Lisa doesn't toot her own horn once in a while, but I would say this Check and Connect program has been an extreme success. We've had so many students who would have dropped out, but because of these connections that they're making with their mentors, we have so many success stories, to the point where Lisa actually had to present or was invited to present at a national conference in Minnesota in September, and now we'll be going to a state convention in February. So we're doing a lot of great things, and obviously the and Steve has mentioned this and the board as well, that connections with our students are so important.
Mm-hmm. I know there was a focus, and Steve and I have talked about that, about trying to have that connection with at least one staff member, whether it be custodial or food service or whatever the case might
be. Yeah, we do the student surveys, those kinds of things, just because we know those relationships are so important.
Well, congratulations, Lisa. How did it feel to present on a national level?
Well, I have to say, when I first got up there, it was almost kind of like being a celebrity, the way they're like, oh, I've talked to you before, but I've never met you in person. So it was really exciting. But it was also exciting to hear what other districts are doing around the state, around the country, just because Check and Connect is actually in some states, like it's a state initiative, and so they have to implement it throughout their entire state in all schools. So it's really interesting to hear just the differences throughout the country in regards to how the program is implemented.
And when do you give another talk then?
In February, we're presenting at the Transition Conference in the Dells.
Okay. So looking forward to that. What are some things that you bring up when you talk to the group?
Well, we just talk about, in general, how we started the program, how we implemented it, how we recruited mentors, how many students, you know, and the forms that we're using and all of that, because there are certain criteria within the program that the mentors do have to do on a weekly, monthly basis.
Steve Board, Richland School District Superintendent, along with Sean Josem, Director of Special Education in the district, and Lisa Goff, school psychologist, on today's morning show. WRCO-FM in Richland Center, where the update at 7 is sponsored by Jones Chevrolet, the car and truck people of Southwest Wisconsin, the Richland Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first, and the Creative Outlet, showcasing handmade gifts, crafts, and scrapbooking supplies, and consigned clothing for the whole family. It's 1 degree below zero at 7 o'clock.
Keeping your vehicle running at its best is easy with GM certified service from Jones Chevrolet, your one-stop shop for all